listening to an AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help you and your farm business. Hello, and welcome to the AHDB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. I'm John Bates. Today, AHDB has released the data from its Spring Planting Variety Survey. This annual survey provides estimates for the planted area in Great Britain ahead of this year's harvest. We welcome guests from the Market Intelligence team to talk about the survey results and what this means this season for wheat, barley and oilseed rape. They will talk about the latest market trends and what impact they have at a UK and global level. We will round things off by taking a look into the future as the head of the AHDB Arable Market Intelligence team, David Udall, explains why 2020-2021 will be an important year for cereals and oilseed growers.
Hello everyone, my name is David Udall. I'm Head of Arable Market Specialists at AHDB. Today I have with me Vicky Campbell, Market Specialist Manager, and Anthony Spate, one of our bright up-and-coming analysts. And we are here to talk to you for half an hour or so about the results of the Planting and Variety Survey that we've released today, and have a bit of a discussion on what we think it means and what the outlook is for the future as well. So we're going to dive straight in. Ant, I'm going to come straight to you. Yep. What are the headline results that people need to know from this year's planting survey?
Well, obviously throughout, we've had excessive rain throughout autumn and winter, and we've seen significant shifts in cropping this year. So the GB wheat area is estimated at 1.363 million hectares, which is actually a decrease by 25% on last year's figure. The spring barley area is estimated at 1.063 million hectares. That's up 52% on last year. So obviously we've seen a large shift from wheat to spring barley. And as expected, the winter barley area is actually down 34% at 293,000 hectares. Furthermore to that, the area of oilseed rape in England and Scotland is estimated at 387,000 hectares, which is down 26% on last year. So you've seen a significant reduction on that, which we'll get into later on. Then area of oats in England and Scotland is estimated at 211,000 hectares, which is increased 21% on last year's result. We've seen Skyfall, most popular wheat variety, although it's down year on year, has the largest share at 10.1% of wheat area. But this is obviously expected due to its capabilities of being planted later into the season, as we've seen growers this year really struggle with the weather.
Shall we talk about wheat first up? So yes. You're saying 1.363, I mean, that obviously is a significant reduction. We were talking, 1.8 million hectares last year. Yeah. You know, let's face it, we ain't going to get a 16 million ton crop this year. What about on a regional level? Is there any kind of like regional specific areas that have seen a bigger decrease?
So obviously we've seen over every region of GB, it's reduced year on year, obviously due to the bad autumn rain and the going into winter as well. We've seen large reductions in areas such as Yorkshire and the East Midlands. They're both down 32% year on year. This is equating to about 180,000 hectares, which will actually be removed straight out of the UK's domestic production, which is actually a significant amount of wheat. And this could really affect our delivered premiums going into the next marketing year. But what's critical to take into account is this can only climb so high as we are at import parity from the continent. So I believe our growers need to be aware of that as we head into the next marketing year. We're not going to see a huge surge and it will be capped. Out in the east, there's been a decrease 17% year on year. The area in the whole of the east is at 384,000 hectares. We've also seen a reduction in the southeast, again, due to the weather. A large area of wheat has actually grown down there. So, that's been reduced by 26% year on year. We're down in the northeast and northwest and the West Midlands. But again, these aren't large areas of where wheat's grown, but they are slightly down year on year. As for Scotland, it's not actually been too bad year on year. They're down 9%. I was actually talking to some folks in the industry and they say, oh, Scottish people, they just crack on with it. They don't think it's going to get better. They assume it's going to get worse. So they just cracked on with their drilling, got it done. They're only down 9% year on year. But it, as expected, they year in, year out do get quite adverse weather. So they are quite used to it.
I was doing a webinar in on sort of Scottish markets last week, actually, and they were, you know, it's not sort of bountiful optimism. There's some, you know, sort of pragmatism, I guess, to crop conditions, but it definitely does sound sort of the best area of the country so far. So, Vicky, from your point of view, you've been doing a lot of our work on the outlooks. You know, what does all of that mean for sort of production potential and where does the market go from here?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be a surprise to no one that it's been really tough this year. As Ant's already said, you know, we've had an incredibly wet autumn, winter. The drilling period was a washout for many. And then furthermore, we then moved into a spring which was dry. You know, May broke records as some of the driest on record. So when we look at our May crop condition report, unsurprisingly, we could see that wheat was faring, you know, much, much worse than we had at the same time last year. So if we try and look at a similar season for production, we actually have to go back quite a few years, back to 2012-13, which we will all remember as being a really tough year. Again, similar conditions. There was that wet autumn and it moved into a dry spring. And in that year, we saw yields of around 7.4 tonne per hectare. So if we take all of this into consideration, much reduced area, the poor crop, the reduced yields, we could be looking at, you know, just a 10 million ton crop this year, which would actually be the smallest this century so far. So, you know, things look set to be tight. But, and I think Ant's already said that, you know, we need to remember this isn't necessarily going to be a bonanza around prices, though. You know, we are capped at import parity, so that is going to keep a ceiling on our prices. Globally, if we look globally, you know, there's still quite a lot of wheat around. We're in a wheat surplus. We are going to see our prices capped. So what's going to be really important going forward next season is to keep this watch on global availability and just to see actually how that's going to impact our prices, because that's going to be the big lever going forward.
I suppose if you, you know, from a wheat point of view, like you're saying, then yeah, that import parity is going to cap everything. But if we then look at barley, we're in the complete opposite scenario. I mean, you were saying there, and you know, massive swing in spring barley plantings. You know, what's the detail there in terms of where it's been planted and the area figures?
So actually, the just to start with, the winter barley area is down year on year 34%, obviously due to weather and stuff. And again, we've seen large reductions in Yorkshire and the East Midlands, obviously the places where excessive precipitation was recorded. But yeah, as for the spring barley area, there's areas increased significantly. It's up 52% year on year. So we've had actually an increase of 76% in just England alone. Again, as poor conditions set in, people sacked off planting winter wheat and actually changed to spring barley. And also what's bear in mind is a lot of growers actually use spring barley as a form of controlling black grass as well. So we've almost had this double surge of spring barley plantings. But the overall barley, although we're down in winter barley year on year and we've had an increase in spring, the actual overall barley area is up 19% year on year. With a plentiful production in the 2019, from a market perspective, you would have actually expected barley to slightly reduce with the significant discount to wheat throughout the year. But no, we've actually seen the adverse weather really take hold of people's decisions and actually go for spring barley. But then also, I think what's key to engage with is the quality of this spring barley. You know, we've had a wet winter. People have changed their decisions to barley, but then what is actually the quality of that barley going to be as we've headed into a very dry spring?
So I suppose I guess we're kind of looking at a bit of a similar year to what we've had in the past sort of 12 months or so. That we know we've got a large barley crop. All right, you know the conditions haven't been ideal, but considering we've got a million hectares of spring barley, I don't think it's been the worst conditions for growing a spring crop, and the rain that we had a while ago probably saved it. But I guess from a trade point of view, Vicky, that adds up to you know, a decent amount of exports. So what does that mean for that export trade going forwards? Where will that barley go?
Well, that's just it. We are going to have, you know, a decent amount. I think that's probably the polite way of putting it. A decent amount of exports. You know, we had over 8 million tonne crop last year. Chances are that's going to be repeated this year, 8 million plus. That's coupled with this sizable carry we've already got coming out of this season. So we're likely to see this large exportable surplus. We've got some additional considerations to take into account for trade next year as well. We mustn't forget Brexit is still looking down the barrel of a gun at us. So we are set to leave the union still on the 1st of January 2021. And as it currently stands, we have no trade agreements in place. So barley could well be set for these heavy export tariffs again. And like we saw last season, we saw people front load to try and circumvent some of these tariffs coming in. So if we see a replica of that this season, we could see this large exportable surplus being front loaded in the first end of the season, which is obviously going to pressurise prices. Also, when we look at our malting barley, the maltsters, you know, we're hearing they're still really well covered from this season. They front bought and front loaded a lot of their barley purchases. And then with the coronavirus pandemic spreading throughout the globe and lockdown measures in the UK, the demand hasn't been there. So they're still really quite well served by some of their product they've already bought. So, you know, are they going to need to buy so much from this 8 million tonne crop that we've got coming forward into this season? You know, that's going to affect prices too if the demand isn't there. And lastly, maize. We need to keep this eye on the availability of maize and the price of maize globally as well. And, you know, people, if it becomes more available, if the price is more attractive, you know, there's the incentive there to switch for the feed compounders. And in addition to that, whilst, yes, we will still have Brexit looking down the barrel of a gun at us, maize is not going to be subject to any import tariffs, we've been told, from the 1st of January. So, again, it's increasing this price attractiveness for people to switch out from using barley to maize. So all of these factors into consideration, this on top of this large exportable surplus that's looking probable, these are all going to affect our domestic price going into next season and throughout the season.
Yeah, I guess we've seen prices for feed barley on an export level generally trading in the sort of, I'm talking like on a boat ready to leave the dock, sort of about between the 130, 140 quid for, you know, the best part of the year now. And, you know, harvest barley prices have been trading sort of low 120s and into the teens. And you kind of get the expectation that, yeah, there's going to be some pressure probably later in the harvest, bigger spring crop. It's not going to come straight away. I suppose the thing I always find like really difficult about harvests is people are always going to be so pessimistic at this stage because they're harvesting crops that have died off. You know, it's going to be such a variable year. We're not going to find out the full crop detail until we're probably well into the middle of August. So, you know, we shouldn't be making too many rash decisions based on sort of early figures.
And I think that's right. You know, variety, you know, that's a buzzword we've heard all throughout the season. There are some people who have been impacted incredibly heavily by conditions, and there are other people, because of the variability of the rainfall or the dry weather or the soil type they're on, that actually haven't fared too badly. So I think, you know, we could see a lot of difference from one field to the next this year.
Yeah. And right, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ant, because I can't remember the exact percentage, and I'm probably putting you on the spot, but in the variety survey, was Planet the most popular barley variety, followed by Laureate?
Laureate, yeah, yeah, that's correct. Yep.
So, I mean, you know, in Planet, you've got a pretty big yielding spring barley that can get quality as well. And I think, you know, people probably, you know, maybe focus too much on probably what yields have been and probably, you know, not the full genetic potential of the crops and the varieties that are going in the ground. So, you know, I think we're probably just saying that there's going to be a big spring barley crop. Sensible marketing decisions need to be made, and understanding, like you were saying, Vicky, that exposure to the world market, it's going to keep on coming. But I suppose we'll talk more about, like, you know, like longer term stuff later on when we kind of have a discussion on outlooks. But
yeah.
And coming back to you,
yes,
you know, I suppose we've not necessarily been giving good news so far. I doubt that story is really going to change when we move on to oilseed rape.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we've got a few challenges there. What's the planting survey say about regional oilseed rape?
Just for oilseed rape in general, England, Scotland, intended for harvest is at 387,000 hectares, which is down significantly. Obviously, we had quite dry conditions when planting, and obviously I'm starting to sound like a broken record. We had the autumn rain kicking, and then we've had pest pressure from the cabbage stem flea beetle. But I think what's to note is this is not so much a national reduction. A large majority of the reduction has actually been in England, which is the area for intended harvest at 355,000 hectares, which is actually down 28% year on year. This could be the lowest recorded area in England since 2002. And I think what's also key to focusing is the areas that we've seen reduce in large. We saw these changes in our early bird survey, but in the East Midlands and out in the East, there's been large reductions of oilseed rape, equate to over 70,000 hectares in these two regions alone. And the cabbage stem flea beetle has been a problem as well. I mean, I've heard talks of it actually spreading out to the west and northwards. But for the moment, we're not actually seeing large reductions in area in Yorkshire and the north in Scotland. But I am hearing anecdotally of people saying, I know that the cabbage stem flea beetle is quite south eastern base and south base, but hearing that it's actually moving north. I think actually also when I've been speaking to people, they've this year, I think a large amount of the reduction has been on the pest damage, but then also I've been hearing from people they've actually taken the crop out of their rotation, and from that we've actually seen a lot of people turn towards spring barley if the crop's been damaged, but then a lot of people turn into oats as an alternative break crop. But yeah, this year it's not been too good for oilseed rape. But I think also what's key to engage with is also our latest crop condition report, when actually 41% of oilseed rape in our May report was rated very poor or poor. So I think it's also a question of yields as we head into harvest and what that could do. But yeah, as we go for oilseed production heading into next year, it is not looking too good.
And we should say, when we're talking poor and very poor, I can't remember the exact definitions off the top of my head in the full wording, but we're talking about an extreme or high degree of yield loss. Yeah. So, you know, we can't be expecting any great shakes from oilseed rape production this year. And I guess, you know, we're going to be lucky to scrape a million ton crop of oilseed rape, which is crazy when you think of not too long ago. You know, it's not like we're talking about 50, 60 years ago when we were talking of, you know, 2.5 million ton rape crops. We're talking less than a decade ago, and the market has swung so rapidly. But I guess, Vicky, that kind of change is pretty rare in the way it suddenly happens. But, you know, what's kind of the industry view, and what's the view of what it all means for the marketplace?
Well, I think, you know, this 1 million ton crop, sub 1 million ton crop potentially, you know, the top and tail of it is we're going to need to import. As a general rule of thumb, we sit around the 2 million ton lever, in as much as if we produce more than that, we can net export. If we produce less than that, we're net importers, and we're going to be well less of that. But I think, you know, the $64,000 question is, where's it going to come from? When we look towards our traditional origins of the EU, they've also had the same challenges with weather. They had this wet autumn. They've had they've had a much drier and a much hotter spring than we've had. So their production's going to be back. I mean, Strategy Grains, their latest report at the back end of June, they put it back 3%, and I think that's probably being a bit kind, but that's what Strategy Grains are currently saying. So, you know, it's going to be tight on the near continent as well, which then turns our focus to Ukraine. And we're increasingly over the season seeing more and more imports coming in from Ukraine. So we expect to see a lot of material coming in from there this season. And I think a lot of that's going to be front loaded as well. People in the UK are going to be looking to replenish their stocks. Purchasers need to kind of refill. So we could see quite a lot front loaded. So when we hear about domestically all these reports of tight stock, tight on the near continent as well, you kind of immediately think, OK, economics 101, supply and demand. Does this mean my price is going to be really supported? Now, I think there's not, again, like with wheat, unfortunately, I sound like a bit of a bearer of slightly bad news. I don't think there's going to be a bonanza on prices. If we look in the long term, we're actually quite well served. So if we've got near term, our imports coming in and being front loaded, we could be relatively well served in the near term. And then when we look longer term towards Canada, towards Australia, things are actually looking quite good over there at the moment. I mean, it's a long time between now and their harvest, so obviously a lot could change and we need to be watching what's occurring over there. But currently conditions are looking quite favourable, so we could be supported longer term there. I think actually though, what's important to note as well is that unfortunately for the guys up in Erith, they had the explosion recently, so they're currently offline. When they're going to go back online, obviously no one knows at the moment, but that could impact domestic demand. How much remains to be seen, but it's something to definitely bear in mind in the short term at least.
Cool. Cheers, guys. So I think we'll call it a close there for part one. And then we're just going to have a quick short break. And then we'll be coming back for part two, where we're going to be talking about the longer term outlook and kind of what it means across the whole market.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information. And follow us on Twitter at the AHDB to stay up to date.
Hello again, everyone. We're back for part two, and we're going to be, I suppose, thinking a bit longer term, looking over the next season, next year or two, and kind of what we think the overall outlook is for cereal and oilseed markets. And we finished a moment ago talking about oilseed rape and how we've got a lower area this year, cabbage stem flea beetle damage, lower production, the need to import. I guess my question is, what does that then mean for farmers' planting intentions, and what do we think people are then going to do next year? And you know, what's the outlook for the longer term? Because it's a difficult crop to grow. It isn't necessarily financially viable for a lot of people now. You know, the yields are being reduced. The prices aren't, as you were saying, Vicky, they aren't necessarily responding directly to the lower production in the UK and the EU, because we've got this bigger production elsewhere in the world that we can import. It doesn't really paint a rosy picture. So, you know, it's sort of a bit of a broad question, but what happens next?
The whole oilseed complex globally is going to be held by the recovery in the global economy. At the moment, you know, we saw crude oil severely pressured. We're seeing support for crude oil now, but then it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to see a support for the whole vegetable oil complex as we go forward. You know, as we mentioned, Australia are back on the scene. You know, they're after years of drought, they're forecast quite a high canola production for next year, and same as Canada as well. So we could see, you know, that really bear pressure on a European price, which obviously the UK will inherently price to. So yeah, I just think US plantings as well, as we go forward, their acreage for soybeans hasn't been revised up more than the market thought. So we're seeing support momentarily for that. But going forward, they're still going to produce over 110 million tons of soybeans. And we're going to have a lot of production from Argentina and Brazil as we head into the next marketing year, which will bear pressure on our domestic price and the whole vegetable oil complex in general. And also, pulling all that together, we've still got to engage with the global picture of politics. You know, you've got the US phase one trade deal, you've got Trump's re-election or not being re-elected. What could that mean for the relationship with China and taking soybeans and our prices going forward?
It's the whole question of domestically, if we don't have rapeseed as the break crop, what would be the break crop there? You know, we have seen growers this season, we've seen this incredibly challenging season, and we've seen a few challenging seasons on the bounce really for them. So, you know, it has been hard. And here, you know, this season we've been hearing reports of, as well as the weather damage, as well as the pest damage, growers just haven't been necessarily willing to put the financial inputs into the crop either, because it's just not financially viable. But if you don't have rapeseed as your break crop in the UK, you know, what could we have instead?
I guess people are going to look at like peas and beans, aren't they? It's the first option, really. That's like, yeah, kind of like the obvious choice. But I don't think there's, well, first of all, I don't think there's enough direct demand domestically to satisfy that level of area change. I don't think the industry's there, and I don't think the export market is sufficiently robust enough for beans to be able to cope with it. So I think, you know, longer term, we need to have a push for domestic protein for sure. I know from a wider HDB point of view, you know, we're looking at ways that we can start to develop more research into how to tackle cabbage stem flea beetle. A lot of people have had different successes of, you know, earlier, later drilling, even companion cropping and all these different kind of things. So it's kind of there. And I kind of think that, you know, you can't see the rape area consistently dropping off the edge of a cliff because, like you say, people will need to plant a break crop, and it's still the most viable one. It's just a matter of, you know, will it be grown in a, you know, really less intensive way just to try and manage and minimize costs and see what we can get at the end of it. I don't know. So I guess, right, here's a bit of kind of like free thinking then, carrying that on. So if we're not going to plant as much rapeseed, or say if the rapeseed area stays the same and it doesn't increase, doesn't decrease, we're talking of an area, you know, 350 to 380,000 hectares that are going to be planted this autumn as well. That's opening up a quite large area of ground that wheat can be planted into, because, you know, people are going to be wanting pretty urgently to plant wheat because they didn't get the opportunity to do last year because of all the weather. So you can kind of see a pretty big wheat area going in the ground this year. And then I'm thinking like longer term again. So we're going to have tight cash flows from this year. So people will be okay with putting the money into buying the seed and getting sort of the first levels of fertilizer and sprays on the crop for the sort of first 3 or 4 months of the growing season. But with a smaller wheat crop and a smaller rapeseed crop and a barley crop that we've been talking about that needs to be exported and is going to see a lot of pressure from global maize as a sort of underlying feed grain, you know, the price outlook isn't great for that. So, you know, cash flow could start to be restricted as we go into 21 and start to move forwards. Then you start to counter with the lower direct payments that we're going to be receiving from the end of this year and through into the end of 21 as well. And actually, the need to market the 2021 crop is probably more important than what it is for the 20 crop, because we're going to potentially put a load more area in. It changes the domestic market view from the sort of massive import parity to potentially a more balanced S&D. And I think it just shows that in the kind of the new world of, you know, like trade policies, as you were mentioning earlier, Vicky, from a barley point of view, you know, if we're opening up to international trade, I think growers have actively got to be marketing more than one crop year at once.
Yeah, and I think they absolutely have to, whilst looking, I mean, obviously you have to grow for your agronomic reasons as well, but and as well as looking at the direct impact that there may be on your price, is taking into consideration these macroeconomic factors as well. I mean, the world we live in has changed so much in the past, well, since February, really, with the demand outlook, with coronavirus. You know, we know we're going to economically go into some sort of recession because of this. The length and depth of that obviously remains uncertain, but it certainly is not looking like a rosy picture. And if we look back to 2008, it took us domestically 3 to 4 years to get out of that kind of recessionary behaviour and recessionary period as well. So as well as the direct links that we have to retail and to food service in the industry, it's also the kind of supply chain twice removed when we see that the impacts of what the livestock sectors will be feeding with this as well. And then the amount of crop that we have that we grow for feed ingredient and the impact that will have as well. So these need to be taken into consideration, as well as we still don't know what the Brexit outcome is going to be.
Yeah, that's a really good point on the livestock market. Actually, that's something I hadn't really thought about. I was kind of singularly thinking about cereals, but you're right. Yeah, if we see a real, you know, negative economic downtrend, and the UK is, you know, sort of economic forecasts looking like one that's going to be hurt more than most, then that will naturally impact on consumers' ability to purchase product that was been fed by domestic grain. So,
and we know that, you know, people are less likely to eat so much, for example, red meat, if they're feeding recessionary behaviour, and the longer production cycles they have in red meat cattle, you're talking at 3 years. You know, these things are a slower burn, but they will have impacts.
So I think what we can definitely say is that if there's no sort of sudden sharp outlook for an increase in demand from a livestock point of view, you know, from talking singularly wheat here, to be honest, more than anything, your human consumption demand for flour is broadly stable to ever so slightly decreasing. I guess it's a question of ethanol And, you know, at the moment, we've only got one ethanol plant running and the other one doesn't look like it's going to be opening anytime soon. And with crude oil levels at $30-$40 a barrel, it's not economically a question of if it's possible either. So it isn't a great outlook. And I guess, you know, the question we get asked a lot is, you know, what should a farmer do? And how does a farmer, you know, quite generally here, I suppose, plan ahead for all of these different factors? Because that's the key thing, isn't it? You know, we've just said, you know, Ant's talking about the myriad of issues that are coming on a global oilseed level. We've been talking about, you know, the difficulties with domestic demand. What are the key things that a farmer would need to do to plan ahead for this and create a strategy, I guess?
Well, I think, you know, how do you plan for the uncontrollable? You, at the end of the day, you need to be able to plan for what you can control. And, you know, this is something at AHDB we absolutely we talk about, we try and promote, we try and use, we try and get everyone to get their arms around, is controlling your costs, understanding your costs. Because the top and tail of it is, if you don't know what your costs are, you can't control them. If you can nail down your costs and you're all over them, then you are in a much stronger place to be able to deal with this myriad of changes that's bound to be coming down the pipeline in next marketing season and beyond.
Yeah, you've got to understand your business, haven't you, like you say? And especially if you're thinking, you know, we know from work that we've done previously that the arable sector is, you know, one of the sectors of the domestic agriculture that is more reliant on direct payments. And if you're having a big chunk of your income being reduced over the next few years, the only things you've got really are either reducing your costs or improving your marketing to improve your sale price.
It's all about mitigating loss as well, especially like we were saying before with barley and drying it for third country export markets. I think it's just key to find where you can get the most money and go with that and just mitigate. Sometimes just mitigating a loss as we head into a you know, bearish market.
But the first point of that is just understanding your starting point, isn't it? You know, you can't build a strategy if you don't have a budget, you know, budget for 3 years and have cash flow. And yeah, realistically, you're probably going to have to market your grain around your cash flow requirements for the next 18 months.
Yeah. And just think, because there's not a lot here as well, it doesn't mean that your prices are going to go up as well.
Yeah.
Think as a global picture, we're very well supplied globally with grains and stuff. And just because we're probably going to go into one of the worst wheat productions that we've seen for a very long time, it does not mean your price is going to jump.
No, but this is where it comes to understanding your cost of production as well. You know, if it costs you £120 a hectare to produce and you can sell anything above that, you know, you don't necessarily have to hold on for the highest price. If you sell above that, you are selling into a positive margin. So, but you've got to understand that cost.
Discover your farm's business strengths and weaknesses with AHDB Farm Bench. Get started at ahdb.org.uk/farmbench.
And one thing that we haven't even mentioned so far is weak sterling as well, because that is basically the thing that is insulating and underpinning, you know, the UK wheat price probably for the last, 3 years? You know, that's the thing. Brexit, even though it's kind of opening up risk from, you know, new trade agreements and losing tariffs, has done a hell of a lot for a wheat price by weakening sterling. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it, really?
The Brexit negotiations go well, we're going to see sterling significantly supported, which will bear pressure on wheat prices. So it's getting that balance, isn't it, almost, of making sure they go okay and not too well to ensure that you underpin a good wheat price.
Well, that's it. You stole my point, Ann. You know, the moment we start getting some certainty around things, you know, markets respond to certainty, and, you know, sterling likes a bit of certainty. So, you know, should we get Brexit negotiations on the table, moving towards something more concrete, that's going to breed more certainty into the market. And we may very well see, you know, these money markets respond on the back of that.
I think that's a great point to end on there is certainty, because I think that's probably the key thing that we're talking about here, as you sort of mentioned a moment ago, Vicky, that, you know, we can only manage the things that we can control, and we can get certainty in an arable business by understanding your cost, understanding your budget, understanding your cash flow, and then from what Ant was saying, understanding what those big global market drivers are and what those big global trends are. You know, that there are tangible things that we can have an opinion on, and that's the best way to manage risk and manage your business going forwards. Well, thank you both for joining me today and having a chat. It's been really interesting and really fun as ever. Is there anything you'd like to finish on? Any kind of like single nugget to finish on before we go?
For me, it's at the risk of sounding like a broken record, it's around control your costs. Control what you can control, and you are so much better set for the definitely bumpy path there's going to be going forward.
I think mine would be just to engage with the global sphere and how that can actually have an impact on your domestic price, ex-farm price.
Cool. Thanks, guys. And in order to do that, obviously, all of our information and all of our analysis and prices are on the HDB Cereals and Oilseeds Markets homepage. You can find all of the latest analysis and information that we're putting out there. It's all free to get to. There's no login, there's no password or anything like that. So it's open to the public, all there to use. Thank you all for your time today, and hopefully we'll speak to you again soon.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, leave a review to help other people find the show. It really does help us appear in the podcast rankings and means we can reach lots more people.
That was the AHDB Arable Market Intelligence team looking at what the future holds for growers next year. If you would like some more information from the team, you can check out the latest webinars available to watch on the AHDB website. AHDB.org.uk. If you're a cereals and oilseeds grower, check out the webinar on grain marketing available at ahdb.org.uk/cereals webinars. If you grow potatoes, you can watch the latest webinar on potato markets and marketing, in which AHDB analyst Alice Bailey discusses the latest figures showing the potato planted area in the UK. Visit ahdb.org.uk/potatoes-events-archive. For more information on potatoes, visit ahdb.org.uk/potato-markets. Thank you to podcast producer Tom Hebbert. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.